Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Okay, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big E Sports Show. And over the past few weeks, we have covered the Big 12, the Big 10, and the SEC. It is now time for a closer look at the Pac-12 conference. And to be completely honest, the preseason perception is very, very strong. You've got five Pac-12 teams that are ranked in the preseason AP poll. And without a doubt, it is a conference that is on the rise in 2013. It has a lot of depth. And one team in particular that is right at the top, of course, are the Oregon Ducks. A lot has transpired over the past 6 months. They have a new head coach, and we're going to get into all of that. Our source for the Oregon Ducks, I should say his Oregon Ducks, and the Pac-12 Conference is Brian Libby. He is a sports author. A few years back, published a wonderful read, Tales from the Oregon Ducks Sidelines, and it is so great to have you back on the program. I have to tell you, Brian, it has been way too long.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
We've got a lot of ground to cover, so a lot has happened, as I just said and mentioned, over the past 6 months. The biggest storyline, you've got a new head coach in Mark Helfrich. How is the transition taking place? How are things coming together? Because despite having a new head coach, you guys have not skipped a beat. There you are, third in the preseason poll.
Yeah. I think so far the poll voters have indicated some optimism about the program, even though there is, like you say, a lot of uncertainty having a new head coach and having a really special head coach in Chip Kelly having departed. But I think the transition is maybe an easier one for Oregon than some schools solely because of the school's approach. There's a bit of an irony with the Ducks football team in that their kind of identity or their personality is one of kind of change and newness, and you think of the uniforms and some of their facilities. But their recipe for success with coaching has been, in a way, the opposite of newness, in that they've been able to retain a lot of the same assistant coaches for just an incredible amount of time, dating back to the early 80s. So most of Chip Kelly's staff was retained by the new coach, Mark Helfrich, just as when Chip Kelly took over in 2009 from Mike Bilotti, he retained a lot of Mike Bilotti's assistants, and even Bilotti had kept a lot of the same assistants going back to Rich Brooks in the 80s. So it's just incredible in this profession and in sport, where there are so many firings and so much is fleeting about coaching staffs, that that there are guys at Oregon who are actually on their fourth head football coach.
It has been remarkable continuity within the program. What has been the key for that, as you're saying, you know, on their fourth head coach?
Yeah, I think the fact that they've promoted from within, as they've changed head coaches over the years, has made that easier. Like when Rich Brooks left for the NFL, for the St. Louis Rams in 1995, Mike Bilotti, who took over, had been Brooks's offensive coordinator. And Chip Kelly, when he took over in 2009 for Bilotti, had served as offensive coordinator before that. And so, too, is that true with Mark Helfrich, the new head coach. So it's really kind of a succession plan instead of making a big hire from outside the program. It allows them to retain a lot of the same offensive formations, a lot of the same packages, and to not have to reinvent the wheel in the middle of a lot of these kids' college careers.
Brian, I want you to weigh in. Give us some insight on Mark Helfrich. I mean, his personality, his style, 4 years on Chip Kelly's staff. I mean, he's a native of Oregon, and he really does understand what it means to be a Duck. I have to ask you, is he media friendly, though? Is he accessible?
He's accessible, but he's not going to be the same kind of media star that Chip Kelly is. And I think he's just a quieter personality, and that can be good and bad, I suppose. Chip Kelly was kind of, he was like one of those really smart guys who likes having fun and being a bit cantankerous or difficult with Mark Helfrich will probably be somebody who reporters find easier to nail down for an interview, and is a little bit more friendly, touchy-feely than Chip Kelly was. Chip Kelly was a little bit like a mad genius who didn't always have time for some of the little things that head coaches do, like talking to the media or meeting with a big donor alumni. Chip Kelly was really about X's and O's, and he kind of knew that he was brilliant enough to focus on the X's and O's and not do some of the things that a head coach coach has to do that's kind of more like being a politician, you know, kissing babies and that sort of stuff. Chip Kelly had no time for that, and Mark Helfrich probably is more like the rest of the coaches out there that understands that it's a multifaceted job. You know, that doesn't mean he's quite as brilliant as Chip Kelly. I think Chip Kelly was very, very special, not just amongst Oregon coaches, but amongst college football coaches. And, you know, you're just not going to be able to replace that kind of great football mind. The system is there and the continuity is there, like we've talked about. And obviously, also, Mark Helfrich would have had a hand in Chip Kelly's success over the last 4 years as his offensive coordinator.
You're listening to the voice of Brian Libby. He is a longtime Oregon Ducks fan, a historian, wrote a wonderful book about that. We wanted to invite him back on the program as we are zeroing in on the Pac-12 conference and the Oregon Ducks. So, Mark Helfrich, obviously this is his dream job. He's 39 years old. It's his first head coaching position. Why did Oregon believe that he was the right person for this program?
Well, I think they did consider some other coaches out there. Before they had hired Helfrich, I had heard a longtime rumor that Oregon was going to set its sights on TCU's coach, and the idea being that his defensive mind,
Gary Patterson, mm-hmm.
would pair nicely with Mark Helfrich's offensive mind. But then I think they just really decided that that the recipe for success that they'd built over the past 15 years or so was worth continuing, and that you know, getting rid of the spread offense or going to a different type of identity would have just been too much, and that it was worth it in Oregon's mind to take a risk on somebody who had never been a head coach before. And in a way, that's the same type of risk they took on Chip Kelly. Kelly, believe it or not, had never been a head coach before Oregon hired him. They had plucked him from relative obscurity when Chip Kelly had been an offensive coordinator at New Hampshire. He was when he made the jump to Oregon in 2007 to be Mike Bellotti's offensive coordinator. So again, it's that idea of continuity that doesn't sound like Oregon because we know them for kind of pizzazz, but it's really just a kind of boring boss who hires from within.
Well, rumor has it, Brian, that there's a different vibe within the program right now, and some suggesting that Mark Helfrich, that he's going to attempt to establish a faster tempo. I mean, offensively, is that even possible?
It's hard to say. One of those things where you have to ask the referees just how quickly they're going to be allowing
right.
the ball to be snapped. But I think that's a testament to the fact that Oregon wants to continue to press ahead with what's got them to this level of elite play. I got to tell you honestly, as someone who is not only a historian of the team but grew up as a fan of the team, it's still just kind of astonishing to me that the University of Oregon is playing at the very top level of college football, and that you know, there are programs like Ohio State or Texas or Notre Dame or USC that are peers to the Oregon program right now. It wasn't that Oregon was a losing program in decades past, but it was more like a 500 club, and it's still just kind of like I don't know how many people would call the Oregon program today a Cinderella story, because the program's been around at a fairly high level for a while now. But having said that, to me, it still feels like a Cinderella story where, you know, as a fan, I still keep wondering when the Ducks are going to kind of change back into a pumpkin, so to speak.
Well, Brian, you bring up a great point, because if you really look and dissect this program, the ascension over the past two decades, it really is something. And I'm thinking back to our previous conversation. I mean, really, Oregon, for many years, they had the image, the identity of being the underdog. I mean, what was the football budget back in the 70s?
I don't know what the budget was, but I remember a stat showing in the 70s that Oregon's football budget was smaller than the Ohio State marching band budget.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so it's really been an incredible evolution. There were ups and downs through most of the history of the program. Like Oregon is actually one of the only college football programs with two different quarterbacks in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, in Norm Van Brocklin and Dan Fouts, and both of those were kind of offensive superstars in their eras. But there were just as many times when they were, you know, 3-7 or 4-6 or what have you, and. So it's really been an evolution over time, and a series of steps. I know some people out there might have really only become aware of the program with, you know, Joey Harrington a decade ago, or with Chip Kelly's program now, but it's really been kind of a steady evolution. It's just that I don't know if Oregon forever can keep up this level of play of being in the top five and playing every year in a BCS bowl game simply because the state of Oregon is not the recruiting hotbed that, say, the state of Texas is, or California, or Florida. So Oregon really has an uphill battle in terms of maintaining that level of play. I think really the role model for the Ducks would probably have to be one of its biggest arch rivals, the University of Washington. You know, if you think of the Washington Huskies for most of the 70s and 80s,
right,
even into the 90s, they were going to Rose Bowls and Fiesta Bowls and even won a share of the national championship in 91. And so I think, you know, Oregon just hopes to continue at that level. But I still kind of wonder when the decline is going to come, because there's no program in all of college football that goes to a BCS bowl game every single year. Like, Oregon right now is actually the only college football program that's been to a BCS bowl game each of the last 4 years. You know, even Alabama hasn't done that. So I'm just wondering, you know, how much Helfrich will be able to keep that caliber of play, because, you know, again, staying at the BCS level every year is not something that any team does.
Well, that's another great point, because there are such lofty expectations on Oregon in 2013, and you just have to wonder, this young guy, obviously very talented with Coach Helfrich, you know, he's working hard to push the culture and the program to the next level. Will he be able to maintain that?
Yeah, yeah. And of course, it's about the players on the field, too. And although I don't know and I can't guarantee what the future holds in terms of Oregon's high level, I can at least tell you that Mark Helfrich, with this year's team, has inherited a squad that's probably as talented as any that's ever played at Oregon in its 115 or 116 years of football, and that you've got a quarterback in Marcus Mariota who, as a freshman, actually had some statistics that outpaced Johnny Manziel even. He had a higher quarterback rating than Manziel and a higher completion percentage, and that was as a freshman. And so, you know, Oregon arguably may have the greatest quarterback in its history. And then you've got a player like DeAnthony Thomas, who is maybe the most electrifying and quickest player in college football. And you just, from top to bottom, you don't have too many great players that left last year. There was a defensive lineman who went third in the draft in Deion Jordan, but mostly the team is bringing back all of its best players. They lost their starting running back, for example, Kenyon Barner, but they have the top high school running back in the country coming in, and Thomas Tyner, a guy who scored 10 touchdowns in one high school football game last year. So I think the story for Mark Helfrich is that Chip Kelly left him a great and supremely talented team to work with. And so, you know, the reality of college football for any team is that sometimes one loss can derail your whole season if you have national championship hopes. But having said that, I look for Oregon to have, you know, probably a 10-win season, if not more, simply because Chip Kelly left the team when the cupboard was really stocked.
Now, Marcus Mariota, sophomore, 6'4", 211. I mean, that's a pretty profound statement. You're saying that, you know, some are talking about that he could be the greatest Ducks quarterback of all time. And when you really start talking about Joey Harrington, Dan Fouts, Dennis Dixon, I mean, that's something else. He's really special.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon has quietly been quite a quarterback school over the years. In addition to the ones like Van Brocklin and Fouts that are in the Hall of Fame, and then Joey Harrington, like you mentioned, there have also been a lot of kind of solid NFL quarterbacks over the years, like, say, a Chris Miller, for example, who isn't going to go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame but played in Pro Bowls and so forth. And for a lot of those years, that was predicated on Oregon having a pro offense that made the transition to the pros a little bit more easy. But, you know, Marcus Mariota would have, you know, like a lot of spread option quarterbacks from Tim Tebow and so many others, have maybe a difficulty with the transition. But Mariota is just such an incredible passer and such an incredible runner, especially if the NFL is transitioning more to incorporating the spread option more. I think Mariota is just kind of a golden child who I look to have success in the NFL, maybe more so than some of his predecessors.
Well, he's a terrific passer and runner, but also, and when you talk about signal callers, I mean, the poise, the patience that he has in the pocket, that's what separates him as well.
Absolutely. I was really amazed watching him as a freshman, how much poise he had. Really, only against Stanford in Oregon's single loss did he ever appear rattled. Stanford had a very aggressive defense, and clearly Mariota wasn't ready for Stanford last year, but not many quarterbacks would be ready for a Rose Bowl champion caliber team like Stanford was. But it's just, other than that game, it's just incredible how he doesn't get too high or too low, and seems to have a kind of effortlessness to what he does.
We are zeroing in on the Oregon Ducks, going one-on-one with Brian Libby. We are so glad you are with us this weekend, the fastest hour in radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We do want to direct you to our radio website. That is info@eradiosports.com, and our website is eradiosports.com. I've got a few more questions that I'm going to throw Brian's way, but I do want to pause. Where can we direct some of our listeners maybe to check out some of your work online and on Twitter?
Well, you can find my portfolio online is just brianlibby.com, and that's Brian with an I, or you can also find me on Twitter, of course, and I like to spend a lot of time talking about Ducks football and really wasting a lot of time, if you want to know the honest truth, but it's hard to stop just in that these are kind of, again, our kind of glory days, and as we've talked about, you know, they won't last, but I feel like this year for the Ducks is maybe one last great perfect chance to win that national championship. And as much as I and other Oregon fans are kind of pinching ourselves, you know, we're not like fans of, you know, say the Texas Longhorns in your area, for example, or Oklahoma, where, you know, there's a trophy case full of championships. It feels like a couple of years ago, we came as close as a team can come to winning the national championship without actually doing it. You know, we lost on the last play of the game to Auburn, and Auburn kicked a game-winning field goal only after a kind of long fluke running play where a lot of Oregon defenders thought a player was down and he wasn't, and so that national championship game against Auburn really could have gone either way. And so it feels like this year, given that Mariota and DeAnthony Thomas and some of their other best players are still around, that there's a chance to maybe sneak in there and get that national title. And you never know; it's going to be a lot to keep the Alabamas of the world at bay. But I would say this year is Oregon's maybe their last great chance in a little while to win it all.
Well, they certainly have a legitimate shot. They are loaded. And I think one of the big reasons why Oregon continues to be one of the top in the premier programs nationally, you talk about the continuation and the upgrade of their football facilities. I cannot wait to hear about the $60 million Taj Mahal, as you say, of college football athletics. Have you had an opportunity to tour it, Brian?
Yeah, it's just an incredible building, and you know, it's been quoted as a $68 million building, but that's just a guess, and Nike and the University of Oregon aren't divulging their budget, but I would guess it's actually significantly higher than $68 million. And you know, in a certain respect, it's like every other college football facility in that it's locker rooms and weight rooms and dining facilities and coach's office, but man, oh man, is it nice. I mean, you just look at the materials and the architecture of it and the technological video displays. I mean, it is really just absolutely first rate, and it almost kind of makes you a little bit embarrassed when you go to the rest of the campus and see block dorms that some of the freshmen are
in. Uh-huh.
And you know, the comparison I would make with Oregon's locker rooms would be like, if you imagine Cowboy Stadium being a college locker room, it's comparable to that, in that there, it's not just luxurious, but it's thoughtfully and cleverly done. There are neat artworks going through it, and all kinds of incorporation of video on a massive scale, and so it's a bit like the Cowboy Stadium effect.
I'm kind of curious, what are the women's facilities like? I'm always thinking Title IX, and we want equality, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, Oregon has some stuff to be proud of with respect to women's athletics, and it's not really represented too much in this building only because it's a football operations center, but there was, for example, a documentary done recently about Oregon's track and field success in the 1970s and 80s. Like, people remember perhaps Mary Decker Slaney, the
Yes. Sister
who fell to the ground dramatically in the 84 Olympics against Zola Budd. You know, people like that are part of the Oregon story as well. And really, even though football is doing fantastically well right now, I think a lot of people would call Oregon a track school first.
Interesting. Brian Libby with us a few more minutes this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We're talking about his Oregon Ducks. And I want to get your take. Talk about the Pac-12 conference this year and the depth. I mean, we mentioned that there are a total of 5 teams in the preseason poll. There's a lot of momentum with this conference. I know Oregon and Stanford, they're the favorites, but this is the Pac-12. It's a conference that really does have a lot of depth.
Yeah, there are a lot of teams that could surprise people this year, I think. I mean, everybody knows that Oregon and Stanford are top 5 caliber squads. You know, Stanford's coming off a Rose Bowl win and Oregon off a Fiesta Bowl win. Those programs are really rolling. The game that Oregon plays at Stanford in November this year is going to be the Pac-12 game of the year. But having said that, there are a lot of teams who could easily come up with a 10-win season. There's the USC Trojans, for example, and even though Oregon and Stanford have risen to the top of the Pac-12, nobody recruits like USC. In fact, maybe nobody in all of college football has the recruits that USC does, and maybe Lane Kiffin, their head coach, is not the greatest game coach, and he's made some ill-advised decisions in the past, but that guy sure can recruit. And so USC, they do have to replace their quarterback, but there's so much talent there that they could easily get into the Pac-12 title game or even make it to a BCS bowl. And then you've got some other programs who either have brand new coaches or newish coaches. You have Sonny Dykes at Cal. You know, he had been part of the architect of Texas Tech's success a few years ago. Then you have Rich Rodriguez and the Arizona Wildcats. That could easily become a program to watch. And then you even have the Washington State Cougars with, speaking of Texas Tech, Mike Leach as the head coach. So, you know, those are some schools that could really start to score some points. And then you also have Arizona State with Todd Graham. That program has been a solid one for years, so it wouldn't take much for any of those schools to rise up. And even Oregon's arch rival, the Oregon State Beavers, you know, maybe that's not a squad that is going to a lot of January bowl games. In fact, they haven't been to a January bowl game since the 1960s, but Mike Riley is one of the most underrated coaches in college football, and Oregon State is, for the most part, a year-in, year-out winner, and they could surprise some people as well.
Yeah, they certainly do have a lot of consistency. Well, we do have you on the line. We want to ask you, Brian, talk to us about former head coach Chip Kelly. The open question is, you know, how will things turn out with him, with the Eagles, and leading them? Kind of give us your insight on that.
Well, it's going to be really interesting to watch because part of the question is how much the NFL is going to let Chip Kelly be Chip Kelly. For example, one of the foundations of his offensive philosophy is being able to basically hike the ball as much as you can. And I spent a lot of time watching Oregon Duck games in which there were a lot of defensive linemen who were bent over and just really sucking wind. And sometimes that was in the second quarter. And still, there's a little bit of a question as to how much NFL referees are going to allow the ball to be hiked, you know, say 10 seconds after the last play ended or 15 seconds. And so, I think a lot of coaches are going to be watching what happens with Kelly in the NFL, not just NFL coaches, but college coaches, because, if the NFL starts to clamp down on how quickly the ball can be snapped for a Chip Kelly Eagle squad, then that might start to influence college football as well. You know, like, for example, Nick Saban at Alabama is one of those people who has tried to put the curbs on that a little bit behind the scenes. And so, it's really, in some respects, a conversation about where the game of football overall is going to go, because, you know, when people have watched the Ducks over the last few years, specifically this rapid tempo looks like something that could really change the game, in that, if you can get your opponent, your defensive opponent, really on their heels where they're not even able to play their best football because they're just, again, sucking wind too much, that can really become an advantage and also can really level the playing field. You know, for example, we've seen a lot of high school programs across the country switch to the spread offense because it helps them get on a more level playing field, and this rapid tempo is really becoming part of that. So, you know, in 10 years, we may see the NFL rapidly changed as a result of this, or we may see Chip Kelly's career kind of fizzle a little bit because he can't play the way he wants to play. So there's really a lot of stake, not just for Chip Kelly, but for the direction that the game itself is going to go.
Refresh my memory, the former head coach Chip Kelly, in terms of with the NCAA, did he address this 3 years probation? And they really, it is kind of surprising that Oregon, you know, they avoided a postseason bowl ban and harsh scholarship reductions.
Yeah, there was a dark cloud hanging over the Oregon program for a couple of years, just waiting to find out what would happen with these NCAA violations. And had Chip Kelly stayed with the Ducks, it seems like he most likely would have been suspended for one-third or one-half of the season or something like that. And so overall, the program, in a certain respect, was pretty lucky to have dodged a bullet in that there are no postseason bowl bans. I mean, you think of this as potentially the most talented team Oregon has ever had, and imagine not being able to play in the postseason.
Right.
You know, these are the most successful few years Oregon has ever had. What if they had been stripped of some of those conference titles? So it really is a dodged bullet in Oregon's respect. But for the NCAA, it was hard to enforce too much punishment because Oregon was really kind of doing something that there wasn't a lot of verbiage about in the NCAA rulebook, and that they were using a kind of third-party recruiting service as a way of unofficially gaining influence. And so this is, I think there's probably going to be a rule in the NCAA rulebook that's unofficially in the future called something like the Oregon Rule. But it's like Oregon was a bit ahead of the curve in that respect. And so they did dodge a bullet, but it's a bullet that not many programs will probably be able to dodge in the future.
Brian Libby has been with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, a sports author, a journalist, and of course, they did a reprint in 2011 of his book, Tales from the Oregon Ducks Sideline. And I'm assuming, Brian, you can go anywhere online and get a copy of that still, right?
You bet.
There's some great stories in there.
Mm-hmm. Amazon, pals.com, anywhere you go, hopefully.
And, of course, also we need to share, I noticed on Twitter that you photographed some football camp run by Ducks legend Kenny Wheaton. Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you have a good time?
I know Kenny Wheaton is probably not a household name to fans listening in Texas or other parts of the country, but Kenny Wheaton is a folk hero to Oregon football because there's kind of one play that happened during Oregon's Rose Bowl season of 1994 that fans here in Eugene and Portland really believe changed the whole course of the program's history. It was kind of an immaculate reception for the Oregon Ducks. It was a 94-yard pick six that Kenny Wheaton made that really propelled them into the Rose Bowl race. And so getting to meet him again and spend time with him and some other Oregon legends at a football camp for kids was like being a kid in a candy store.
Well, it's always fun spending time with you and reliving some of those great Oregon Duck memories. And we look forward to the future. And Brian, of course, we look forward to having you back on the program. Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.